Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 188 of the show, where I'm going to be reviewing, well, the whole season of Fallout Season 2, but I did give my thoughts on the first half earlier this year, but I am not alone. I am joined by one half of the Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. Dylan Pollack is back on the show. Dylan, hello.
Hello, the greatest half of the Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. The one who does all the behind-the-scenes work of the podcast.
That's true. We have we share the workload of our podcasts. And I'm excited to talk about this because I think, similar to me, you are just a viewer of the show and you've never played any of the games. Is that correct?
Literally, the only thing I knew about the games was that eventually there's one in Vegas. And at the end of season one, when they set up Vegas was coming next, I was like, oh, that's a reference to one of the games. And that's all I knew.
That's perfect, because that's pretty much where I am. Bethesda as a video game developer is not one that I typically visit, not by any deliberate choice. It just sort of works out that way. So it'll be interesting to see what you think about the show. I know there's going to be people yelling in their headphones when stuff from the video games comes up and they're like, that's really important. I'm like, I'm glad for you. So as the whole season is now available on Prime Video, this review is going to be full of spoilers. You have been warned. Time cones will be listed in the description should you feel the need to hop around. And I'm really hoping for question of the week. Dylan remembers what he said, so he can just say it to me directly. So if he pulls that up at some point, that would be quite humorous. So you have been warned.
I probably don't need to pull it up. I remember what I said.
You do remember. Perfect. All right. We're going to jump into spoilers on our thoughts of Fallout Season 2.
This is Stephanie Harper, Hank McClane's wife. I don't know how this works exactly, but he said that you were always listening. And if you can hear this, initiate phase 2.
I gave my thoughts on the first season that I thoroughly enjoyed it. What I found incredibly funny, even though he's only listed as like a producer and not one of the main showrunners, I found a lot of similarities with Jonathan Nolan's other TV show, Westworld, quite literally where the ghoul is the de facto man in black, which I thought was funny. But this season, more than anything, what I liked about this show is its exploration of the significance of somebody's own personal morality and the back and forth with what's going on. I like how we get to see more of what led to the bomb, but I'd be lying if I found that even necessary this season. Knowing who Cooper Howard was and his exploration, I thought, and this is going to be a criticism, the flashbacks in season one didn't feel like they were direct memories happening to Cooper. When we saw them, it was something that was more tonally important than I'm remembering this thing that's happening, and now the audience is seeing that thing that's happening. So that part I didn't necessarily love. Of course, Walton Goggins is fantastic. So the more we get of him out of the makeup, I'm sure he's happier about that. But general thoughts on the season as a whole, Dylan, what did you think of the sophomore season of Fallout?
I had a very similar feeling that I had to season one, which is this was pretty good. There's one storyline that I kind of hate. And I think there was a nice thing in season two that it dropped out for a certain point, but it came back at the end. I don't know how important they are to the game. I don't give one iota of crap about the Brotherhood. I don't care. Every time we're with the Brotherhood and they're talking about their bylaws or whatever, I'm like trailing off. I'm having daydreams. It just does not matter. And the thing is, Maximus is good when he's with Lucy or even with the character Thaddeus, because I like Thaddeus and the way he played off of him. Maximus with the rest of the Brotherhood, I'm just like, I don't care. They're all a little more barbaric. You're a little less barbaric, but they think they're not barbaric. Like, it just doesn't ever get anywhere for me. The only other bad thing I would have to say about this season is things that felt very video gamey are the Deathclaws, because it's never really explained what they are, but maybe we'll get there, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Which I'm okay with that. And the same thing with Walton Goggins.
Obviously, they're Colorado Avalanche fans.
Is that a hockey thing?
Never mind.
It's I was going to say that.
Actually, wait a minute. Ooh. No, they're from Alaska. Never mind. I'm getting my my snow states mixed up. Ignore
okay.
that.
So you got the death claws, and you've got at one point the ghoul is saved by some kind of mutant, and they're setting up sort of this mutant war, which I'm guessing is a big video game thing that, like, if you're a video game fan, you totally got. For me, it went, again, right over my head that I was like, okay, that'll be cool later. But I was loving Ghoul and Lucy's exploration of morality, that he keeps saying, like, you'll get to where I am too. And she keeps saying, there's some of me still in you, that some of that goodness still in you. And we really get to see it both ways, where, you know, she does get to show some abject cruelty at one point, and I think she feels a little bit bad about it. And at the same time, we get, since we're in full spoilers, he gets his full chance to get revenge on Lucy's dad. And he, you know, rather than just killing him, like, you know, that Ghoul would like to do, does exactly what Lucy would do and shoots him, I think, right in the ass and leaves him to be taken away by her. And I like it as a story thing, but I think I would have loved to have seen resolution of this and just get the answers directly from his character. And we don't, because he mind wipes himself, I guess. I also just kind of don't love the idea that we're building up to another unseen villainous group. Like, I don't remember what they kept calling it.
The Enclave.
The Enclave. Now, the Enclave, which apparently involved the President of the United States, played by Clancy Brown, who we both love.
Who's that? I'm just kidding.
Lex Luthor and Mr. Krabs? How dare you? But
He was also in John Wick Chapter 4.
He was. As Mr. Krabs in live action.
As Mr. Krabs, yeah. He ran the burger joint. We don't actually see where they eat inside the Continentals, but it's a Krusty Krab. That's canon now.
It ain't no chum bucket, that's for sure. I don't know. I really like what's good about the past storyline to me, even though I know where it's going, it still has me interested in how we got there. And I think it's very easy to have a storyline in the past. Like, when you had the character who they kept showing was Canadian and then became the Overseer. I feel bad that I can't remember her name. I did not care what was happening to her in the past, because they've already, there's no mystery left in her character now, it felt like. Whereas the Ghoul, it feels like I can still find out. There's so many layers to that character that it's like, well, he's showing me something, but he's also shown me that there's so much more to him. And the Overseer character, I was like, I don't know how much more there is to you, you know? Other than at the end, we get to see her deploy the forced evolutionary virus, I think, in the vault. But I'm loving the past storylines where it seems very specific that everyone's 200 years old now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's the only one who's been alive the entire 200 years? But everyone is 200 years old, it turns out, because too many people are showing up in the past now, it feels like. But I think the show, you know, the season was worthwhile just for what we get with Kyle MacLachlan, Lucy, Ghoul. And I really like the character of Thaddeus.
Stephanie is the person you were...
The Overseer, okay.
The Overseer, yeah. I think what's most compelling to me about this show is its exploration of morality, because you brought up the brother herd. I mean, they are a herd.
They're a herd of brothers.
They're a herd of brothers. If you are a diehard fan of the video games, I'm sure there's a lot of this stuff that is meaningful to you that's from the games. And I mean, the visual language of Fallout has permeated pop culture to such a extent where you're familiar with the aesthetics of some of this stuff, like the helmet, the masks of the Brotherhood of Steel, and then the new California Republic, which shows up in bits and pieces of this season. That's maybe one of the most recognizable images for me, specifically in the finale when we see the sniper wearing that mask. I'm like, oh, I know that. I don't have any context for why I know that, but I know it's a Fallout-y thing. The dueling stories, and I do think it is kind of a hindrance from having the season be as effective as the first, which was Thaddeus's independence from the Brotherhood established his individuality. And then in this season, when we see him back with the Brotherhood, and their whole perspective is clearly based in the ideology of, like, religious zealotism, because that is what they are, right?
Oh, for Maximus.
For Maximus, yeah. And the Brotherhood of Steel, that even 200 years from now, or from then, from 20, I believe it's 65, they still have this religion with whatever. And we get to see the different clans of it. And we don't actually get to know very much about why they are that. It's just sort of like, well, we are this. And they're like slightly like this. And there's Kumail Nanjiani, who just shows up to get his head, get his head beat in. Where I think what's more interesting in the Wasteland is more so the small pockets of stuff. Like we have the Home Aloners, the Legion with Macaulay Culkin. And that to me is more like something that, fits in with this world where, it would be insane and much more barbaric. Like there is a civilized nature to some of the people, even in the absurdity of which they're living in, which much more fits in with like what New Vegas is on one side of the wall. And then we have like Mr. House on the other side of the wall where he's got the death claws and whatever, where Maximus is just there and you're like, okay. And then he's going to escape and, you know, he's got cold fusion. But his storyline sort of just feels like we've got to tell you things that are going to happen that are going to be important, where it's like plot points they have to check off, where Maximus has to cause the Union to break up and start a war so that way they can find, I'm assuming you watch the post-credit scene, right? So they can find the Fallout version of a Gundam, Legacy Prime or whatever the heck it's called. So they're going to build that, and that's going to be important.
Is that what that's supposed to be? It's a bigger version of the robot suit or something?
Apologies again.
That reveal was very unimpressive for me because I was like, it looks remarkably similar to what
this
they were time, already.
It's taller. And I get it. Like that, there's going to be equivalency of other things that we are fans of. And I'm not saying it's a bad reveal, but that's deliberately in there to tease video game fans. What I find more interesting in teases is where we know the story is going. What's been frustrating for me about this season is we hear so much about the Enclave, but having briefly looked about what they are in the video games, I just don't feel as a threat. They necessarily feel like the villain that they're going to be, because Kyle MacLachlan's like hopping around doing what he's doing, enhancing the tech of House Co or whatever the heck they're called. And I like that ideology because it really does show the severity to which humanity was broken prior to the bombs getting dropped. We are at the doomsday clock is at 12. We don't know when the bombs are going to drop. What is a solution for humanity? Well, kumbaya, my lord. Everybody's got little Doc Ock tentacle controlling things in the back of their neck so everybody is happy being controlled by the head of that poor congresswoman. And I like that back and forth with, I just want to keep calling her Ella Purnell, but Lucy, where that character's entire perspective on the world has slowly just been getting worn away by her experiences. And that's the most interesting part of the show. I do think she is the quickest human being in the history of humanity to quit drugs because she immediately goes into withdrawal and just throws them all up and she's all good, which I thought was kind of funny.
Well, didn't she get the whatever, you know, they have, she had to pay bottle caps to get withdrawal all or whatever they called it in the Fallout world. Yeah. So they had some special future thing to get
it out of
your system.
That was quite funny. And the back and forth with her and the ghoul is my favorite part of the show because those two characters are on such different sides of the moral complex where the ghoul has done such terrible things for such selfish means, but they're the easiest to understand. His whole goal in hit the 200 years is I'm just trying to find my wife and kid. What he's willing to do to get that information is obviously abhorrent, but the motivation for that character is understandable, and as is with Lucy, which is what connects them in this second season. I think where I really did struggle with this season, and it might be in the way that I watched it, but it's also something that I think you do have to take into consideration when creating these shows is it was a weekly drop when the first season was all at once. And while I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the binging model, you can sort of tell when something might be created in that way. And I watched these in two, four episode chunks, 1 to 4 and then 5 to 8. And I really did feel like the momentum kind of got undercut from the series once they got to New Vegas, and that they just kept having to bring characters out of there so they could come back, as opposed to having some sort of narrative structure as to why they couldn't just get down to the vault. Like episode 7 in particular for me felt like we are just, the e-brake is on and we cannot let this thing loose.
I mean, the death claw thing in general set up a good enough reason to me for why nobody but Lucy, and I feel so bad that I'm having trouble remembering her dad's Hank. Name. Kyle MacLachlan is just the actor. Hank, thank you. They can't get down to Lucy and Hank's vault in Vegas because of those death claws. And that was enough for me, which made it work for when he's fine. You know, it really brings back the whole morality thing that when Maximus is trying to fight, as much as Maximus is not my favorite character, watching all of them take bets on him dying, even though him dying means they're all going to die. And watching the only one who really is interested at first is Thaddeus, who's been with him the whole time, the one who was kind of becoming a ghoul, which, again, is a big change in his morality since he started off as, I enslaved these kids to make more bottle caps, you know, but which who knows what happened to those kids by now, but that doesn't matter. I really like that character that he was struggling, but trying to help him and his arm falls off and yada.
The arm fall off is, I think, the best joke of the season.
Him trying to just like put it back.
But they're just like, they're walking. It, you know what? It really does feel sort of like a Deadpool joke.
Like yeah, that way, I could see that.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's just the sound design. It's just so perfect. Like, oh, Johnny Pemberton's like, that's really unfortunate. Like, my arm fell off.
He was great as that character. Yeah. Oh, I don't remember what I was going to say. But with Hank in general and everybody going back to 200 years.
Oh, can we talk about how bad the de-aging is on Kyle MacLachlan?
I think, like, it's okay. It's good enough to me.
No, it's so bad. It looks like it's a combination of two things for me. It is Uncanny Valley because he is so uncharacteristically smooth. And it also looks like they have Vaseline'd the camera just on him because he's the only person that it's happening to. Like, it does feel, I get X-Men The Last Stand vibes when that, every time they cut him, I'm like,
he's giving you Professor X?
Yeah, no. Don't do it.
They have to, the thing is, they need to find a way to make him less prominent in the storyline because they're gonna do like you can't just keep showing other people's faces while he's talking type of thing.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's not great. And you know, back in the day, I would have said they're on a TV budget, but this is Amazon. I'm like, they can afford to if they want to. I would also say though, since we're bringing up going back to the past, why was it? Was there a good reason presented why it's that congresswoman's head who is driving the train in that vault?
Yeah, they go through it in, I want to say it is the beginning. Let me look this up because I always forget if this is 7 or 8. Oh, it's at the end of 7, and they describe it in 8, which is Kyle MacLachlan says like she's the kind of person who doesn't like ruffle any feathers, and she's
the perfect
like,
bureaucrat or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like. So she's kind of a nothing person. Like she has no strong opinions on anything. But to me, that completely goes against who she is, because when we meet her, she quite literally is trying to solve many problems.
Yeah.
Like she's on the steps of Vegas being like, hey, all this bureaucracy. And I mean, the irony is some of this metaphor does work for the world we're living in now, where all the billionaires are doing these crazy things and, you know, building bomb shelters. Like, what about the rest of us? Like, there's this arms race for cold fusion and everything. And it doesn't seem like she's able to accomplish anything. And then, oh, just kidding. Maybe she's involved with the Enclave, which is quite a switch.
Which you're saying you looked up some stuff about the Enclave. I still have not. And I'm still curious to where that goes. I was intrigued by the ending with her setting off. The Overseer setting off phase 2 to see like, okay, but that remotely worked. It also felt out of nowhere that it turns out that that's, oh, she was Hank's wife the whole time. I'm like, but she's not their mom, right? Like, I was like, what?
Well, it's one of those story elements that this is, and I think you would agree with me in this criticism, TV takes way too long now. Like, shout out to The Pitt, because they're like, we're going to make a season of television a year, because that's how TV works.
And those are every still like 20 episode seasons too, aren't they?
Yeah, 15. This is 8. And we are almost, we're almost at 2 full years. I'll give them credit. This started in December and the first season was in April. And obviously strikes probably had something to do with it.
The poster child for this is Stranger Things, taking 10 years between seasons. But yeah.
Absolutely unforgivable. And with this show, it's one of those elements where I'm watching this going, I don't think they've told us this. But if they have, I've definitely forgotten if it's important. Because we've never seen Lucy and, what's his name, Frank? What's her brother's name?
Norm.
Norm, the kid from Hannah Montana. We don't see their mom. And also, I'm trying to remember if we ever saw Stephanie in Vault 32 with Lucy present. Like, some of this...
We definitely did. She was, they were friends in the beginning, weren't they? And
yeah,
she was there when she got stabbed in the eye.
That exactly. But does she know that she's like, yeah, I don't, I really don't know. Well, we know now how she got into the vault. And it,
which I love that her evil twist is she's Canadian.
I mean, what does that say about the United States right now? 51st state wanting to buy me up here. It's not happening. It's not happening, guys. I am very curious to seeing what the progression is of this, of the next season, because I think that's a fun conversation to have, which is, it is prototypically the case with so many television series where you have an overarching story and you kind of whittle away at whether it be like a season level boss, to equate it to video games, but like you don't get to the big bad, you know, till the end of the series, where the motivation through season one and two was the dad, which we got to him both times at the end of these seasons. And then the pivot point, transitional point, it's all the same thing, into, well, there's these other things, really does feel narratively like an interesting shift that I'm curious about. And I know this is going to work for video game fans. Like, you can probably clip how many times we've said that in this episode, but purely from a viewer of the television series, I don't think it necessarily builds in enough, because the two seasons we've watched, we've got Vault Tech, and then we have Justin Theroux as
Robco
of Robco. And I like Justin Theroux in that role. He's just like perfectly feels out of time, yet in the 50s.
It's kind of what he was born to play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've got those two dueling companies, which really take up so much of the oxygen, or the H2O if you're in Vault 32. And because there's oxygen in water for our listeners who don't know. And and for that part, I was compelled because that's what we get in the background. I do wish they did pepper more of the Enclave in it, because when we do see Vaseline faced Kyle MacLachlan, so much of it is he's just the stooge, right? Bumbling around. Hey, can I watch? And there isn't an undercurrent of he's actually in this like future organization that's going to be the motivation moving forward, where we obviously know the Howards are in Colorado, which is likely where the Enclave is based. So are we going to get a reveal that his wife was also part of the Enclave? Because there is that twist in the ending of episode 8, which is he's arrested for treason and his wife initially looks really sad about it because she didn't know, but then it turns out they had a conversation about he's taking the fall for her. And I do like the back and forth between them, and really him being like, yo, the world's not worth our kid, which is a crazy thing to say, but the morality of what they want to do to keep their her family safe and what he's willing to do is the best part of the flashbacks. But for the threat moving forward to be a group we know nothing about, really, that's where, as a TV viewer, I'm like, okay, but I'm not excited because I don't know anything about them.
I feel like as you're setting it up now, I'm even thinking to myself, was the point supposed to be that Hank is part of the Enclave even? Or is Hank just aware of the Enclave? Same thing with his wife's name is Barbara, I think.
Yeah.
I also was kind of disappointed by... because I really was happy for Ghoul that I was like, he's going to get his answer finally.
Yep.
And he really instead got, you know, your Super Mario, your princess is in another castle, was the very much the end of his season storyline.
Yep.
What I also don't like is the implication. Like, I love that there's a clue in there, which Did she go get a postcard, come back, leave it there? I don't get how that works, really. Whatever. To me, I also, my implication in my head was, does that mean they never got in there and years ago they went to Colorado instead? Does that mean...
You think she's ducking him? She just keeps moving around.
Well, I don't know. 100 years ago, did she get out of there? They could have died of old age by now in the time. I was like, how does he know? He's like, they probably woke up about 5 minutes ago and now they're heading to Colorado. I was like, okay. If you're happy, I'm happy. Walton Goggins, sure. I'm just happy to watch more Walton Goggins.
We'll get to that in the question of the week responses. I enjoyed this season. I do think its momentum doesn't work as effectively as the first season. Like, this really does feel like the middle of a story more so than a complete seasonal arc. It does for Lucy, but every other character, you're right, it's kind of like, and then, and you're like, okay, but I want to be no more. And then it does feel like a transitional point where it does make for a less satisfying episode of TV. There are no breadcrumbs leading to that reveal, right? It's just their things are there. Are they in them? I don't know. Like, we didn't get any indication from Kyle MacLachlan. Let's just call him by their actors' names. It's fine. David Leitch's favorite actor, that they weren't in there, right? He quite literally is like, oh yeah, your wife and daughter are here. Like, does he know they're not in there? Maybe. I don't know. Right? And then you know what didn't work for me as well? And from just a purely cinematic standpoint, I felt it was slightly underwhelming. When he's like, look, I made it teeny tiny. And guess what? There's a ton of people who have the teeny tiny. And then, like, he activates his own. And I'm thinking, oh, has he done this to, like, all of New Vegas? Because that would be, like, everyone just stops. But he, like...
They didn't really show how many people he's done it to. They just showed, like, but there are people out there, is what he said.
Which is, like, interesting, but when it's just Kyle MacLachlan, like, sitting on the ground because he got a bullet in his butt, Forrest Gump style.
Something bit me.
Yeah. Lucy, ice cream.
It was a bullet, wasn't it? That jumped up and bit you?
That is a movie to watch before you die. And have you guys done that yet?
No, too obvious to me.
Oh, yeah, too obvious. Raiders of the Lost Ark was too obvious.
She'd never seen it, so I suggested it. I said, don't get me started.
Gab's not listening to this. Yeah, it's I liked this season. I like these characters, but overall it does sort of feel much more than I like in a second season. Being such a devout TV watcher, I feel like season three is usually when things really start to transition into other stuff. And it does sort of feel like they had two seasons in mind, because my biggest thing, and I've said this a couple times, so apologies, is there's not a ton of groundwork laid in for the pivot to be, now we're going to Colorado. Like, the season one did really build in a lot of the stuff to Vault Tech and what are the mysteries behind that organization, and then, oh, it turns out it's New Vegas, where this one, quite literally, as you said, it's a postcard. Guess what? We're going to Colorado.
Yeah, but I think that's similar, because this season really just ended with, like, season one ends with Hank flying away, and it's like, where's he going? Vegas. Like, it's not like they built up the idea of Vegas for a long time, and I think that's fair. Do the same thing for season three with the ideas of Colorado. And I don't know if this is a season three idea or maybe season four, even this mutant normie war that may be coming. Yeah. Although, to be fair with the, and I'm putting air quotes, war idea, season one really ended with what felt like the Brotherhood saying, we're going to war. And then in season two, there really wasn't much Brotherhood war.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who played the mutant?
No. Is it somebody that I know?
I'll give you a hint. He's the voice of Clayface.
Oh, Ron Perlman?
Yep.
Oh, that's nice. I know he's the narrator for the games too, isn't he?
He might be. I don't know.
I think I saw some clip from YouTube about that he talked about being paid $40 in a sandwich to narrate the game, and then 2 years later he gets a call, you want to do it again type of thing.
Yes, he is. He's been doing it the whole time. That's very cool.
Great voice.
He's a great voice. I do think there's a lot of like, but wait and see. And I'm sure it will be interesting. This is a well-made show. I think production value standpoint is something worth addressing, which is I love when they can use physical sets like inside something industrialist to just, you know, that's we're going into some factory. Great, you can do that. But anytime we're in the lived-in world, it doesn't just feel like, oh, that's just California. Like, this does feel like a place that has experienced so many things. But for Maximus, what I'm curious about is you've really abandoned everything that has to do with the Brotherhood of Steel. And I don't want it to be what we got in this season, which felt kind of redundant from season one, which was, oh, I'm just going to go back to them and, you know, maybe things will change. Like, what are you, and are you going with Lucy now to fight off? Like, I'm assuming, at least based on the way that this show works, like, the Legion is coming into New Vegas. They've all got to just die in the first episode of season three, because if we're doing Enclave, you can't be dealing with them at the same time. It just doesn't really fit in, I think, narratively speaking.
Well, I don't know. Enclave seems like such an overarching thing that it might not be the main threat of season three, that it could continue as a background thing in season three while they deal with Kaiser's palace. But that seems unlikely to me.
Yeah, you're not getting Macaulay for a whole season. That doesn't feel like it's coming.
Well, the way they hyped him up, I felt like he was going to be in more of the season, but it was nice to see him.
Yeah, what, two episodes?
Yeah, I think he's really only in the two episodes.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know if I have a ton more to say about this. There's any like major things within the season that we haven't discussed that you would like to?
Really like Walton Goggins' performance when he gets knocked onto the pole and he's trying to maintain his humanity.
Oh,
and his
my
family.
God, I love that so much. It gave me Mission Impossible Rogue Nation flashbacks.
But grosser, yeah.
So awful. Well, and that's one of the things I love so much about this world is it's so, and this is not a criticism, it's so dumb. Like, he gets impaled through what would be all of his intestines and is still able to be alive. As also, like, and I do like the battling back and forth with him, like, ghouling as he's waiting for his meds and then just pulling his body up the pole. It's like, this world is crazy.
Which you really thought he was going to fully Mission Impossible himself off. And instead, once he, like, does not make it, I really felt devastated for him as he keeps trying to say to himself, like, my daughter's name is Janie, like, trying to remember things. And it's one of those things that I can imagine you really have to trust the process of, they're going to make this work with sound, they're going to make this work with music, because I can only imagine Walton Goggins on the day of saying, okay, I'm going to say these lines, and then I'm going to pretend to go all, blah, 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 you know, and he's like, you're going to go with me and make this work. And it does, like, it shockingly enough does, because we've seen full-on ghouls out there that you're like, we don't want that for our ghoul, you know?
No, we like this one. Well, and to me, it is a symbol of how well that character's been written, and this is, I'm going against what I said earlier, but the effectiveness of the Cooper Howard scenes, because even though he does some reprehensible stuff, you're still rooting for him at the end of the day. Like, he does bad things. And I think getting to see the back and forth with him and Lucy and her really being tested from a morality standpoint does really work. And on top of all the Foley and everything, the sound effects, just like intermittently just spitting up blood as he's trying to wrench himself up that broken street lamp it's a great sequence, because it's so simple in concept but so well executed that it works for his like character motivation, right? It's like somebody trying to not remember something, or not forget something. So I did really like that.
I will say they do a good job the whole season of Hank and the ghoul being two opposite ends of spectrum for Lucy, that the ghoul does not really care about society. He cares about his goals, and he is willing to do whatever it takes to get them. And then you've got Hank, who only cares about society, but does not care about the people in society and will do whatever he wants, because he really does present to Lucy, like, we can have civilization again, but at the cost of every
civilization
being enslaved. Yeah. What civilization is it if nobody has free will, really?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and it really explains how twisted his idealistic humanity, like civilization, is, where everyone is an automaton. So, like, you have like they might as well be robots. So it'll be fascinating to see if we continue to explore these like random people popping up that are like nice for absolutely no reason. And Lucy truly getting tested, and you see that loss when she ultimately does have to push the button and activate the control nodules to stop the violence. Like, can't we all just get along? So I'm curious to seeing what happens when she's really presented with a challenge of, no, all of these people are reprehensible, like the Enclave, where dealing with her own survival, like that's a small problem, right? It's much more personal to her. But what does it mean when there is an organization deliberately trying to, you know, take over, and we have all these different factions starting to brew? I'm curious if there's going to be like a full out war between the Brotherhood and the Enclave and the new Republic of California. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm interested, but because there's so much more unknown with season three than there was for season two for me.
It's not, this is totally an aside, but there was a character in the New California Republic who, he's the one who ends up in Hank's vault, and I think he's getting his ass kicked for part of that time by the Legion guy, who, I don't know if you know this actor, his name is John Grease. He famously was recently in The White Lotus season two.
Yep.
Most famously, he's Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, that's
where I'm thinking, because I know him, I'm like, oh, that's John Grease. I was like, is he going to be a bigger deal? And I was like, oh no, he just needed a role, I guess. I was like, but good on you, man. But I just kept waiting for him to be more because I was like, oh, I like you, John Grease. But no, not really.
That's fantastic. Well,
if they hadn't reset him, he could have thrown a football over the mountains.
Well, and do you know what his character's name is, which is a great connection to Back to the Future?
Biff?
It is Biff.
Hey!
There it is. It is Biff. Yeah, I recommend this show. Prime Video has a shocking amount of really well-put-together TV that feels as if the money's put into it and doesn't just feel like network TV that happens to be on a streamer. So I would recommend this series. And again, this whole conversation is coming from two people who have never played the games.
Yeah, honestly, it's much better than I ever thought it would be. Because I remember going back and watching season one probably only a couple months ago. Like, I watched it after the whole thing came out for Goggins, really. And I just remember being like, you know what? This was pretty damn good. Considering I knew nothing about the games except that Vegas is somewhat involved, I had a good time. And I felt the same way after season two, that I was like, was this great television? Is this prestige? No. But I had a good time watching it, and I again, whenever season three comes out, I'll probably do the same thing I did with this one. I'll wait until all the episodes are out, and I'll binge it again.
Yeah, it's a very good show that I liked Westworld, so to get something that even remotely scratches that itch, that works for me a lot. Now, because Walton Goggins is one of the stars of the show, he was the inspiration for a question of the week. Dylan, should we get to some responses?
Hell yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
There's something I really need to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
The question of the week was, what is your favorite Walton Goggins role? Now, Dylan, you were the very first person to answer the question of the week. Would you like to say what you said?
It's definitely not going to be verbatim, so I'm going to say a new thing that's going to have the same spirit, the same essence.
All right,
so
sounds good.
It was, what's your favorite Walton Goggins role? Was that the question?
I believe so.
Now, Walton Goggins is the man. So he's great in things like Vice Principals is incredible. He is so good in that role. There's the famous meme of him. I don't know. Watch Vice Principals if you like Walton Goggins. Watch The Righteous Gemstones if you like Walton Goggins. But I think the thing that really elevated his career and made him a bigger star.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
No, that's one of the few things where it's like, you wasted Goggins. You could have Goggins for something better.
Why him not being back, that to me is a Marvel crime.
I don't know. It feels like when they used up
Justin
Sam
Hammer.
Rockwell too. Yeah, I'm like, come on. Because that's a great actor.
He should have been in Wonder Man.
Sam Rockwell? Like Justin Hammer, you mean? Oh, okay. Yeah. I watched season one Justified and Goggins was great on that. But the show that really put him on the map, and I've been watching it with my brother for the past like year and a half. It's taken us a long time to get through it. The Shield. He is so good on this show as one of the most corrupt police officers you've ever seen. Shane Vendrell, who also goes by the AKA Cletus Van Damme. He's simultaneously like, he's a horrible scumbag, but he's so bad at being a scumbag that like, he's kind of hilarious too. I don't think there's any intentionality in him being funny. But me and my brother would just watch the show and go, Goggins, every time he does something stupid, like the character. I don't know. Watch The Shield is what I'm trying to say for Michael Chiklis and Walton Goggins. And when you're done with The Shield, watch The Righteous Gemstones. And when you're done with that, go watch Vice Principals because Walton Goggins is awesome. We all need to watch more Goggins.
We do need more Goggins. All right, we have, let's see. The first answer is on TikTok from user dot, 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 dot. Hateful Eight
like
or
Goggins.
Django. Yep, it might be. Abraham Brad Pajaman said Sons of Anarchy. Let's see. RDZ said, research tech in Born Identity. That's super funny. I didn't know he was in that. Couldn't be more realistic research tech. Excellent role. Jason Perot, 290, says Shane Vendrell in The Shield.
Yeah.
Jermaine Jones says he is so good in The Hateful Eight, Invincible, The Shield, and Gemstones. Scotty Cameron, friend of the show. Scotty, I hope you're doing well. This is a reaction first to last week's question of the week, which was, what is your favorite Harrison role outside of Star Wars and Indiana Jones? Not surprised that Blade Runner, The Fugitive, and the Ryanverse were the most used answers. A little surprised nobody mentioned Red Hulk. Scotty, stop it.
He sure got paid for that movie.
Oh, he sure did. The movie was so-so, but Ford still delivered in that film. Now, this is a conversation I'm going to have maybe when Secret Wars is over. And this is not a Harrison Ford criticism, but it is one of the least effective recasts, because William Hurt was so good as Thunderbolt Ross in the stuff he was in. Like, it wasn't a ton, but the three appearances of Incredible Hulk, Civil War, and then Infinity War. And fourth, how dare I forget Black Widow, which was actually the last thing he filmed for Marvel.
I would not have remembered that, so kudos to you.
Yeah, there we go. I watched it during COVID, quite literally on the TV behind me, because theaters were closed. All right, on to the Goggins. I always want to call him Walton Goggins, like goggles, especially because he has that ad now where it's like Walton Goggins goggles.
It's honestly really wanted to get them just to support Goggins, but those are expensive.
Well, who knows how much money is actually going to him. So he says, favorite Walton Goggins performance was Warden James in G.I. Joe Retaliation. Scotty.
That's such a Scotty Cameron answer.
Scotty. And then the Punisher and Cobra Commander kill him. Just kidding. It's Cecil Stedman in Invincible. He nails the voiceover role. Like BTS, Invincible has a near perfect voice cast. So I do have to say with Scotty, I do think Walton is such a talented performer, but he has reached that level for me where when he's just Walton Goggins and stuff, I'm like, hey, it's Walton Goggins. Because I didn't see a lot of his earlier work, like The Shield. Of course, I've seen him in Gemstones, and it's insane. But I have to say, Cecil in Invincible so perfectly matches just his tone of voice and his delivery. That might be my favorite, because that character, similar, ironically, to the Ghoul, is so evil, but is doing things for the right reasons. Like, Cecil just wants specifically America.
I think he's more Hank-esque in that show in terms of ideology. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it might be that, which is, it's fascinating. I mean, I'm not surprised. We did get a ton of answers on TikTok, and I'm sorry I didn't get to all of them. I'm not going to lie. I was not expecting that short or TikTok to explode the way that it did, but there were a lot of Shield, a lot of Gemstone answers in there. Not as many White Lotus, which I was a little disappointed by.
Maybe it's just because it's such a recent thing, but can I also recommend to the Goggins uninitiated, if you want to see early, early Goggins, you should watch the Hilary Swank Karate Kid, where he is he's just one of the background bullies in there.
Yes,
and you're just hey, look, it's Goggins.
Yes, he is. That's incredibly fun just to see those actors. Like Brendan Skeller, I don't know, the guy that's in the
Sklenar, I think is his name, yeah.
Sure. From the movie with all the lawsuits, It Ends With Us. Anyways, I saw a clip of him recently. He's like, I'm in a background of Glee a bunch. I'm like, oh, that's fun. So
wasn't Austin Butler a background on some show? I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, but those were like Disney Channel, Nickelodeon things back then. Anyways, we're not going to talk about those actors, but what we will be talking about, Dylan, is the question of the week for next week. I will be reviewing.
Did you say your favorite Goggins role first?
I did. Cecil.
You did just say that. I'm sorry. Please continue. Okay.
Dylan's headphones are clearly not working. He's just like, I want to. So next week, I'm going to see, I keep wanting to say Wuthering Heights, but it's Wuthering Heights, which stars Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi, a very popular book getting readapted for what is our Family Day weekend when it comes out. Now I'm struggling with this, Dylan. Do I ask the obvious and just ask what is your favorite Margot Robbie role? Or what would be interesting is if you had to recast her in the DCU as something else. Which, Dylan, I am bestowing you this power. This is the first time. So you get to decide what is the question of the week for next week.
Oh, God. I feel like you can't ask favorite Margot Robbie role just because there's not Barbie. Enough answers there. I feel like it's going to either be Barbie or Harley Quinn. I think you're going to get 99%.
I'm not saying
there aren't other answers. She's very good in lots of things.
The Legend of Tarzan, Jane Clayton, Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street is what came to my mind, too. Yeah, you know, she's also in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I think 99.9% of your answers are going to be
okay. So let's do Barbie that. Then. So you're James Gunn. You're recasting Margot Robbie in the DCU. Who would you cast her as? So that
I'm
is
just
the
happy to be James Gunn for a minute. That's cool.
Then you do get to be James Gunn for a minute. Yeah. So if you would like to answer the question of the week, you can do it like Dylan does. You can answer directly on YouTube. You can do it like Scotty does, which is directly within the Spotify app. Or you can email the podcast, filmrealistpod@gmail.com. You can hashtag QOTW to any of the Film Realist social media. I will see it. If you have not subscribed on your favorite podcast platform, I would greatly appreciate it. I do not believe this week we have any new reviews. Let me check really quickly. I do not. But we are crawling towards that 500 mark on YouTube. So if you're listening to this on YouTube, I know Dylan does, please subscribe because that would be absolutely incredible. It's the first phase of monetization and it would allow the podcast to have more opportunities, which would be great. I've already stated this. I will be reviewing Wuthering Heights next week on the show. Dylan recently released an episode reviewing I Had It and I Lost It. Dylan, what did you do?
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes. So you can check to find out when that didn't make the list. I'm just kidding. I haven't listened to it yet. I have been on Movies to Watch Before You Die several times, and it was fun. If you want to hear me crush Dylan's soul with A Muppet's Christmas Carol, so you can listen to that one from last year. I should tell you this before I let you go. I played for Nalina and the kids. You're Dilly and Gabby. Ooh, my children. sang that version of what the joke I made for weeks.
For Siskel and Ebert. Ooh.
Yeah. Incredibly fun. So yes, you can check out Movies to Watch Before You Die for an interesting perspective in the past of cinema and whether it's worthy of your time or not. Thank you so much for listening to the show. My name is Kyle Naranya, and I will see you